Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. Fred Williams is on assignment. I am Bob Enyart. So how do I get out of going to church next Sunday? The world's leading creation author is going to speak at Faith Baptist Church in Longmont, Colorado on Sunday, November 11th. And it's not often that you get to hear Jonathan Sarfati in person. I don't know if it's hard for you to skip attending your own church for a Sunday morning. But if so, imagine how hard it is for me. I'm the pastor. Oh, wait a minute. I see here on the schedule that Dr. Sarfati is also going to speak on Friday night on November 9th at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. So I can make that Saturday night, November 10th at Faith Baptist Church. And then again at Faith Baptist in Longmont on Sunday morning. And then that night, Sunday evening at 6 p.m., Dr. Sarfati will be at Foothills Bible Church. That's in Littleton. So I guess I could go ahead and preach at Denver Bible Church on Sunday morning and still hear Dr. Sarfati. So I'm okay. And make sure you go out also if you live in the Denver area or if you could get here. But wait a minute. Really? Are you sure? Right now? We got him on the line? All right. What an honor. Dr. Jonathan Sarfati, welcome back to Real Science Friday.
Well, thank you. The honor is mine.
Doctor, our audience doesn't know this, but the two shows we did with a famous atheist physicist, Dr. Lawrence Krauss, you helped me prep for those shows with some very wise counsel in advance, so thank you for that.
Well, glad to help.
So you'll be coming out here, and I'd like to take this opportunity to get your thoughts on the creation battle and the scientific evidence to help confirm our faith that the Bible is God's word and that it's reliable.
Sure, so very important, yes.
Yeah, so I thought, beginning with Nature, the journal Nature in September published a landmark study involving 440 scientists' research on human DNA, the human genome.
Well, I mean, it's a very important paper because for so long, evolutionists have been convincing people that most of the human genome is junk and that only 3% of the genome was operational, and that was because of their evolutionary presuppositions. But now the ENCODE project has actually found that at least 80% of the human genome is doing something, and part of that is there are codes upon codes in the human genome, not just the code that makes protein, but also codes where the DNA is rolled up on the histone, and also where DNA is spliced into various things. And also it seems like it's an operating system as well. So much of the DNA is found to be doing something. So clearly it's not junk DNA when so much of it is clearly transcribed, at least as far as RNA. So the whole notion of junk DNA actually held up scientific progress and was in fact even called the biggest blunder in molecular biology.
The biggest blunder, back in the 1990s, I had the opportunity to debate an anti-creationist named Dr. Eugenie Scott.
Oh.
And that was for an hour on national TV. And I had asked her repeatedly for three pieces of evidence that any kind of higher function evolved, like eyesight or flight. And finally, after about a half hour, she said that junk DNA was powerful evidence against creation. And I had asserted, and I'm only a talk show host and a Bible teacher, I'm not a scientist. So I said, Eugenie, and we have this, we aired these audio excerpts just a few weeks ago.
Right.
And I said, Eugenie, don't you think we're just now beginning to learn about genetics? We're at the very beginning. And she disagreed with me. She said, we affirmatively know everything we need to know to conclude that these non-coding regions are junk, that they have no function. So we wrote down the date, the time, we marked the tape, and we still play that from time to time, as you could imagine.
I mean, it's an appeal to ignorance. I mean, it is an argument from personal incredulity, as Richard Dawkins likes to put it. But in fact, this is exactly what the evolutionists are doing. We don't know the function of junk DNA, therefore it has no function. And now, with this paper in Nature, they have a lot of egg over their face.
Mm. there are many geneticists who have now given up on the idea that most of the genome is junk, and they're the ones doing the research and publishing the functions, whereas there are still the hardcore preachers, like the high priest of the evolution cult, and they still don't want to give in. They're trying to argue with their own colleagues and saying, come on now, you guys are exaggerating. This stuff doesn't really have function. It's sort of funny to see the evolutionist arguing against the evolutionist.
Well, I mean, the fact is they've found function, and it's the case of Eugenie Scott, where so basically you see no function, hear no function, talk no function, even though the experiment shows there is a function.
Right, yes. Then if we could go to another topic, it's the amazing discoveries, and this is a gift that just keeps giving. Mary right. Schweitzer from North Carolina State University is now publishing yet the latest study, and this is in pre-press, although I was able to obtain a pre-release copy of her paper, that they have again documented soft tissue from dinosaurs, and this time there are four different proteins that they have identified, and they've used, and this I think is the first time in history now, they've used a DNA stain to indicate that even though they haven't sequenced dinosaur DNA, they actually are able to identify regions within these cells that have dinosaur DNA.
I mean, this would be totally unheard of under a billions of years scenario, because certainly proteins, we know how fast the proteins break down because we can measure that. We can measure what effect temperature would have, and there's no way they could survive 65 million years even if the temperature was freezing, yet dinosaurs are supposed to have lived in much warmer temperatures, so right. The breakdown would be even faster. But with DNA, when DNA is far less stable than proteins is, so the fact that we have DNA really is a death blow to the millions of years view.
It sure seems that way. Now, we can predict, as young Earth creationists, as biblical creationists, scientists have looked at mummies from Egypt over right. the previous decades. And they've seen that these molecules, they do break down at predictable rates. And they're very complex, and so naturally by entropy and molecular motion and just slight changes in temperature, these fine-tuned molecules are going to eventually break up. And so since we can see that and we could predict that these things would only last thousands of years, then when we look at the claims that they're from Archaeopteryx and and from a hadrosaur and from a triceratops and a T-Rex, and with a straight face, they're saying to us, well, these blood vessels and these blood cells, they have remained for 68 million years.
They've got no way of explaining how these things could possibly survive, because even under the most favorable conditions, which is a dry and cool environment, and these things still break down. You just can't escape the chemical damage, and yet here they are. And DNA especially, that's just so ridiculous, because it's one of the least stable molecules we have in our system. And if that's still there, goodness.
Right.
The proteins just wouldn't last as long as that, anywhere near 65 million years old, because we again have measurements of these things, measurements of the breakdown rate.
Now, as the Bible says that the testimony of two or three witnesses establishes a matter, and of yes. course we have the triune God, the Trinity, going back for eternity past,
right.
affirming that God himself is good and loving, and then God gave us an eyewitness of creation in the Bible. But then we use the tools of science and we get additional witnesses. And so when we look at these ancient fossils from dinosaurs, we see soft tissue. For many, many people, that is enough to say, hey, you know what? I think I've been tricked. These are not millions of years. These are recent.
What people should think, but whether they actually do think that is another matter. Like, to my knowledge, I mean, Mary Schweitzer still hasn't come on board with that. She still has her dogma of millions of years and just as puzzled as to how these things could survive long. I mean, even a quote from her saying that all we know about chemistry and physics, saying these things should have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here we have them.
Right. And Dr. Sarfati, you're right about that. We, about 5 years ago, maybe a little more, we offered Jack Horner, who's Ooh. The famous paleontologist who consulted for the Jurassic Park movies, and he works with Mary Schweitzer up in Montana. I spoke with him. We offered him a grant of $23,000 to carbon 14 date their T-Rex that they found soft tissue in. He hemmed and hawed. He said he didn't want to. He knew we creationists would make hay out of it.
Right.
But he finally said, okay, I'll talk to Mary and I'll see. Well, they eventually decided not to. But what is interesting is that there's two aspects that I'd like to ask you about.
Right, okay.
One is carbon 14 in fossils and in other things that are supposed to be millions or billions of years old. And the second is something that's maybe more technical, and it's amino acids that are left-handed. And it
right.
seems to be, as scientists are looking at things that are even not only millions, but even billions of years old, they're finding that they tend to have left-handed amino acids, and they shouldn't really. They should be 50-50 left and right-handed if they're not from recent life. So can
well,
we talk about both of those things?
Carbon-14, people don't realize mostly that it actually decays pretty quickly, a half-life of 5,500 years. That's pretty quick by their standards, because it means that nothing should have carbon-14 in it if it's older than a million years or so. I mean, because it all would have disintegrated, or at least disintegrated to such a low level that you couldn't detect it with the finest instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when we look at things like coal, now coal was supposed to have formed, for instance, the Carboniferous period, which is over 300 million years ago.
Right.
So there should definitely be no carbon-14 in coal. And yet, here we go, we find carbon-14, and they have tests to rule out contamination. It involves carbon-13, which is another type of carbon. So contamination doesn't seem to be the explanation for coal, but even less for diamonds. Now, diamonds are a pure carbon. It's a type of carbon, and it's the hardest substance on Earth, apart from the human heart anyway. Now, diamond is so hard it couldn't be contaminated, and yet diamonds were supposed to have formed over a billion years ago, and yet the diamonds have carbon-14 activity as well. Now, once again, billions of years should not have carbon-14. It should all have disintegrated, and yet time and time again, we're finding carbon-14 in coal and diamonds. So these things can't be the millions of years old they claim, because the carbon-14 would have disintegrated. So carbon-14 is actually a very good ally of the biblical timescale.
They really are. I think you wrote an article a while back called Diamonds Are a Creationist Best Friend.
Right.
Fabulous article, by the way. Great references. And so we've been focusing on that area. That's one of our hobby horses here. And
oh, good on you.
We've been keeping track of the carbon-14 that has now been documented to be in coal, fossil wood, natural gas, marble, now dinosaur fossils also, limestone, oil, graphite, everywhere it's not supposed to be. And even a couple of these dinosaur peer-reviewed studies now have carbon-14 dated their specimens, just a couple, and they have indicated that they have found plenty of carbon-14. Now, they're suggesting that's modern contamination, yet they're saying that the soft tissue is not contamination, which shows
well,
the bind
the
that
thing.
They put themselves in.
Well, you have to wonder why not date the actual soft tissue sample from the dinosaur. I mean, it would be very easy to say, well, this is collagen. Collagen is not formed by bacteria, so date some collagen or osteocalcin. Date one of the dinosaur proteins they find, see if there's carbon-14, and that's what they should be doing. That would rule it out. I mean, and contamination seems like it's a bit of an excuse, because the only evidence for contamination is that these things are millions of years old, so
right.
there shouldn't be any initial carbon-14 left.
Right.
Is there any independent evidence that there's contamination? No, I don't think so.
Right, like a mosasaur. With a right. small bone from a mosasaur, and it was found in a different type of sediment, not like in sandstone in Montana with some of the other T-Rexes and all. And so they said, wow, look at that. This is a dinosaur-era reptile, extinct reptile. It's found in different sediment. It's not a huge femur bone of a T-Rex. It's a relatively small bone. Here it has original soft tissue,
yeah.
and they say, and it's not contamination, it's actual soft tissue, and then they say, oh, but there's carbon-14 in there, that must be contamination. It seems to me that if you have a bone that's being contaminated with carbon-14, well, for sure you're not going to have original soft tissue last for 65 million years.
Now, something doesn't seem right there, does it?
No, I don't think so. So this is a lot of fun. Then they say it could be neutron capture, and we've been trying to understand this. I know that there was a paper submitted at an AGU conference in Singapore this summer by a radical creationist paleontologist, a team from the U.S. and Germany. They're young Earth creationists. They dated 10 dinosaurs from China and from Montana, Texas, and they all, of course, had carbon-14. They also checked for uranium and thorium and found that there was less than 20 parts per million of radioactive material. So they ruled out the possibility of this carbon-14 being from neutron capture because there's just not enough radioactivity going on for that to be a plausible explanation.
So these sound like very careful scientists trying to rule out the alternative explanations. Even in my old Diamond article, I pointed out that to use capture as an explanation, you'd have to have so much uranium or thorium or radioactive material that you'd almost call the stuff uranium. You wouldn't call it coal anymore. That's how much you'd need. And also, if it was capture of nitrogen turning it into carbon-14, well, then the carbon-14 dates would correlate with the nitrogen composition of the material, and that would also ruin carbon-14 as any sort of dating method. Because we don't find this sort of correlation, fortunately, but if we did find a correlation, we couldn't use carbon-14. It would be a waste of time.
Doing these Real Science Friday shows for as many years as we have, and I hang out at a local coffee shop, and we'll have folks drop by to chat. One of the friends I've met there has a degree in geology from the School of Mines in Golden, Colorado. And he worked in industry for years bombarding different elements to create isotopes for industry. And so I asked him about the possibility of this carbon-14 being a result of neutron capture. And he's not a young Earth creationist. He believes in God. But he said, you know what? We couldn't get carbon to capture neutrons or nitrogen, really. You had to go up, you had about double the weight of the element to get up to around sodium before they're ready to capture neutrons. He said we would use sheets of carbon to slow down the neutrons. So I looked into that, and I'm not a scientist, Dr. Sarfati. You have a degree. You're a chemist, right?
I also did some nuclear physics in my postgraduate for what it's worth,
Nuclear physics. So he explained that he did this for years, and to suggest that all this carbon-14 results from nitrogen and carbon capturing neutrons is not reasonable.
Well, it makes sense because the bigger the nucleus, the more they call it a cross-section, which is what they describe it as how likely it is to capture a particle. So the smaller the nucleus, often the smaller cross-section it has. So I can well believe that the smaller nuclei are not going to be very good at capturing neutrons. But, yeah, certainly carbon is what they call a moderator. A moderator is something in nuclear reactors to slow down the neutron because they want slow neutrons for their nuclear fission. They don't want the fast neutrons, so they have a moderator to slow them down, but they don't want them to be captured.
And that is exactly the terminology they use that you just used. Thermal neutron capture cross-sections show that when you get down to carbon and nitrogen, it's rather difficult to capture these neutrons. So then they're left with contamination, and it seems difficult to argue contamination when you're dealing with a diamond or original dinosaur soft tissue.
Well, that's very much special pleading, and if contamination was such a plausible explanation, then why would they trust any carbon-14 date they have?
And then could we talk about this amino acid situation? Because as I understand it, living creatures have in their proteins left-handed amino acids. And so when they die, then they naturally start to racemize until they're 50-50, right and left-handed. So apparently when scientists do look to see whether some supposedly ancient specimen, whether or not it has right or left-handed amino acids, they're finding out that they've got left-handed amino acids, which doesn't make sense if they're millions or billions of years old.
Well, that's the thing, because in fact, the rate of racemization, they've used that as a calibration for the rate of protein decomposition as well. It would not last the millions of years.
Well,
by the way, the left-handed amino acid is a huge problem for evolutionary ideas of the origin of life and non-living chemicals, because any primordial soup would produce 50-50 mixture of left and right, but our living things need 100% left-handed amino acids and 100% right-handed sugars for the DNA and RNA, and that is not produced in a primordial soup.
Right.
And as you were just pointing out, when you get the pure-handed stuff, it tends to go back to the 50-50 mixture quite quickly.
Right, randomizing. And so this is such a well-known phenomenon that when scientists want to date how old a whale carcass is, they look at the left-handed acids in the layers of the whale's lens in his eyes. And they use that now as a dating mechanism to date when did this whale die.
And it's a fairly short-term dating method by dating method scale. So, yeah, so the fact that you've got 100% left-handed in something, again, for a short-term method, it's not going to be millions and billions of years old. That doesn't make sense at all.
So when there's something called fig tree chert. I don't know too much about chert, but this is in South Africa.
Right.
And it's supposed to be billions of years old. And
right.
They found that it had primarily left-handed amino acids.
My goodness.
And so, and also Pleistocene eggshells have unracemized amino acids. And so what I wish is that we could get the scientists to do more tests of these types on the dinosaurs that have soft tissue and see how much carbon-14 is in them and see if the amino acids are left-handed. And then the power of the argument increases exponentially.
Yeah. I mean, Pleistocene is quite recent, but according to the geological timescale. But certainly when you're getting into the much earlier things, again, there shouldn't be the sort of pure left-handed amino acids around by that time,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's exposed to water or exposed to alkali or heat. All these things increase the rate of racemization.
So, Dr. Sarfati, we have tried to stake out on the Internet. You know, whenever creationists make an argument, there are the atheists and the evolutionists mm-hmm. who make their counter-arguments.
Oh,
and,
yes.
For example, at talkorigins.com, which you're not one of their favorite people over there.
Yes, and the Hugh Ross types, too. The people in the church who want to compromise with millions of years don't like us either because we expose their compromise.
Hugh Ross, Reasons to Believe.
Mm-hmm.
I like the point that has been made recently by leading creationists that between the two issues of evolution and the age of the earth, it's the age of the earth that is really the greater issue, the more important issue. And we had the Denver chapter of Reasons to Believe agree to debate us on the age of the earth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, downtown Denver in front of a live audience. And it was a geophysicist and a mathematician from up at CU in Boulder against myself and a high school Christian science teacher.
Okay.
And, doctor, we sell the debate and they don't. We had a wonderful time. We think the young earthers won the day. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't be selling the debate as we did.
They would be selling that they won, that's for sure,
yeah. Yeah, they would. And this is a leading geophysicist, John Nichols, is the past president of a major geophysical society. And it was really great. And we simply used the fundamentals and the basics. And we asked the geophysicist, what is the best evidence you have, that scientific evidence that the earth is old? And he said, the universe. Why doesn't he use his own expertise?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we ask somebody in their own expertise, they answer in somebody else's field.
Oh, that happens all the time. Yeah.
It seems to. So we're staking out this territory online, dinosaur soft tissue. When people search for that, we've now beat out Talk Origins and many other evolutionist groups, and we're marching toward number one on Google.
Because, I mean, they are really getting quite desperate, but certainly things like biofilms, which just don't make any sense. They're resorting to desperate measures to try to explain the soft tissue away, but
right.
I don't know how they're going to explain away the proteins they've just discovered, that's for sure.
Right, because bacteria do not produce the kinds of proteins that are being identified in
definitely
these
not.
Dinosaur bones. So we're about out of time. Dr. Sarfati, we have your schedule here. I'm looking at it. You'll be speaking November 9th at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, 7
right.
p.m. So we're really looking forward to that. And it's a topic, I was surprised by the title, Are Miracles Scientific? I'm looking forward to that.
Well, thanks. I mean, I had to choose a title that wasn't on one of my DVDs, so the people are getting something a bit new.
Oh, well, this is great. We're very excited. You're also going to speak at the Faith Baptist Church up in Longmont on Saturday night, then Sunday morning and Sunday evening. And so we'll be keeping an announcement to that effect on our homepage of our website and letting people know.
Sunday evening is Foothills Bible Church, which is in Littleton.
Oh, okay. So I got that. Okay, I'm glad for the correction. So Sunday evening is at Foothills Bible Church in Littleton.
That's where the massacre happened about 12 years ago, right?
Well, Columbine is very close to there. That's right.
My goodness.
Yeah. And by the way, you might recall that one of the murderers had a T-shirt on during the crime that said natural selection. And they were, of course, fans of Darwinian evolution. And an absurd quote on the front page of the Denver newspaper, when the coroner released the autopsy and we all found out that the one murderer, Eric Harris, was wearing the shirt that said natural selection. And the Denver Post actually said this. They said, "It is not known what that phrase referred to," on their front page. Now, they wanted to imply that maybe it was a video game or maybe it was whatever.
Oh,
but their willingness to obscure that Darwinism leads to this desperate worldview of emptiness is,
goodness,
you know, it's just obvious. So thank you, Dr. Sarfati,
well,
so much.
Thank you again, Dr. Enya. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Well, God bless you. And I'm not a doctor, just a pastor. But God bless you, Dr. Sarfati.
God bless you, Pastor Enya, then.
Thank you. All right, so Dr. Sarfati will be out here in Denver Friday, November 9th. That's next Friday night. And then Saturday night and Sunday morning, Faith Baptist Church in Longmont. And then Sunday night at Foothills Bible Church. So looking forward to those events. God bless you guys. Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, The Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart Debates Atheist Zaketh, a Psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com.
The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.